You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Kind of back. Like, there was a beginning of the show that didn't include me because I was on my way back from a youth retreat today that I do frequently, these events where I go out and speak and play music, and I did that and had a long drive, and, well, you never know. Actually, what it was is I got behind very slow-moving traffic out in the middle of nowhere. Generally, I would have been doing about 60 miles per hour. I was doing about 30 for most of my trip. So that threw me, undoubtedly. But I think they were enjoying the sights on their motorcycles out there. So what do you do? Father Tom Sherman is with us this afternoon. Father Tom out in the desert southwest. Father, how are you?
I am doing very well. Hey there, how are you doing?
Hello. Hello. Can you hear me?
Hey, yeah. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we got you. Good deal. Things going
okay,
well?
Okay, good. Is the foliage finally changing? I do miss the changing of the season.
You know, we're not there yet. Generally, it's a little bit later, and we usually have to get a cold snap before we get into it. But usually October, November time frame is when, you know, later October, early November, I think.
Right, right.
It really gets
well, maybe I'll
here.
See a little remnants when I get home for Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it could still be some around. Hard to say.
Yeah. Well, listen, we got a wonderful young kid here at the parish,
mm-hmm.
and he's a junior high school kid, and he just got a letter from UK to come visit and possibly play on the basketball team.
Oh, is that right? Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So you
he
know,
must
we
be good.
Root him on, you know?
He must be good if UK's got an interest in him. Basketball, that is.
Oh, yeah, definitely so.
Wow.
And so he's very excited. This is the one place he's always wanted to go, and he finally got an invitation. So he and his coach are flying out sometime soon to go visit the place and see what it's like.
That's awesome. Well, good for him. That's
yeah.
terrific. Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens. Good stuff.
Yep.
So what's been on your heart since last we talked?
Well, I'll tell you, mission has been back on my heart again. We're very excited here. We're going to be doing a real experiment with our community. And our, you know, the Salvatorian community is in 40 countries.
Oh, okay.
We have representatives in 40 countries. And one of the things that they've been pushing is that oftentimes, you know, the Western world kind of, you know, we have one group here and one group there, and then no one ever talks to each other. It's because mm-hmm. we're kind of into our own thing.
Silos.
And so the challenge has been, how do we live out the universality of the church?
Mm-hmm.
How do we recognize that we're not just here, that we're part of something that is so big and so important to us? And so the parish here has got the opportunity to adopt a parish in Guatemala, which is run by our community down there, or at least partner with a program down there near the Mexican border in Guatemala. And what makes it interesting is this is where a lot of the poor, suffering Guatemalans are coming from that are coming to the States.
All right.
This is kind of at the heart of the area of the struggle. So we're very excited about that. It may be a positive outreach for us as a parish. And what it's going to do is, you know, we're hoping to have a program where our kids can go down there and do projects.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can really build this kind of relationship between the communities and to build something and to really, really reflect that universality, both in our prayer and the way we work and the way we see the world here.
And so this is your parish basically adopting this parish in Guatemala as kind of their project, parish to parish.
Right, and they are also Salvatorians down there.
Oh,
and
okay.
So we're linking with another Salvatorian community because what's happening now is, you know, with the shortage of vocations here in the north, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
in Europe and in the United States, you're seeing a reverse evangelization taking place.
Yeah, a reverse mission field, right?
Really a reverse mission field coming up there. And I know I've met a few people, I think, in the Lexington Diocese a while back that were possibly from Africa or other places.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And you're seeing more of that. So the more we can increase this dialogue, the better it is for everyone as we go into this next phase of church life and what's happening there and how that's touching it and letting people see this richness that makes us who we are. And as I said, I think that's one of the great gifts of the church. And I know I sound like a broken record, don't I, Leo? But it really is one of the great gifts that we give the U.S.
Sure.
Well, we really do.
Well, and so now the Salvatorian model, is it always that priests like you are in parish communities? Is that kind of part of the mission?
No, they're in a variety of different things. Okay. They're in education, they're in mission building. You know, it depends on where, what country they're in and what they're doing.
Okay.
It can vary. In the United States, we're in about four or five parishes in the United States.
Oh, wow.
But we have other people working in seminaries. We have other people doing a variety of different things.
All right. So, this is a an initiative of the Salvatorians to connect these two parishes.
Right. It's an initiative. We decided, with my council here, if this is what the community is challenging us, let's be a model of how that might work.
Yeah.
And see what we can do, because this may be something that other communities in other units of our community can do overseas and other places. Yeah. And we can kind of show this relationship and build it. So we're going down the week before Thanksgiving. We'll be on the road a lot and see what they have to say.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and that's the reason I'm asking these questions, because it seems like mm-hmm. there could potentially be some sort of model. And I know that there are many parishes who kind of have a sister parish that they support some way, somehow.
Right.
But how much of that they're really doing and you know, how connected that is. You know, this day and age, in a global community with immediate connectivity that we have across the globe, there could be something really neat when it comes to this type of connection where, you know, there's a real community between the two parishes taking place. And I don't know. I just think that there could be a lot of fruit from this.
Oh, I think so too. And, you know, we had an example of that the first year I was here when we had our children in the CCD program here. We have about 400 in the program.
Wow.
They raised $5,000 for a well in Africa.
Wow.
And wound up bringing the bishop. Bishop Kakanis came to the celebration when they got the money, and they had an African choral group that came from across town to sing for us here. It was a big celebration. It really was. And, you know, those kids take that back and they say, wow, what a church I belong to. Isn't this amazing that I can make that kind of relationship beyond what, and you know, as you said, with the way the internet is and everything, anyway, it's much easier to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so you combine those different things and you find out that the church, maybe it's big, but it also gets small at the same time.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and we don't have to think anymore that it's this far away place.
Right.
Because it can be so immediate. It can be so connected. And we could, you know, Skype call with someone at a parish across the globe and be connected with them. I mean, I think that there's beauty in that.
Well, there really is. There really is. That's the reason when I hear people say we have to build walls and things like that. Well, how do you build walls to that? You just can't do it. it isn't going to happen. You know, it just doesn't work. It's the way the world is and as the Chinese say, there's the yin and the yang. There's the good part, but then there's also the negative as well, and you have to balance and deal with that. But, you know.
Well, if Mark Zuckerberg has anything to do with it, there will be no internet walls. He will float his drones wherever he possibly can and make sure
that's right. He even gave one to the Pope.
Yeah. Did you
hear that?
Oh yeah, sure. I talked about it when it happened a couple of weeks ago. And I, you know, speaking of, I think there's something so beautiful about that. Just that. I mean, you know, we have Marconi developing radio for Vatican Radio, right? We spent the last 100 years, whatever, however long it's been, with that particular technology because of its evangelization efforts initially. And you look at what I think this is highly symbolic when you see Zuckerberg with the Pope with this drone technology to say, we can take messaging, connectiveness, community, we can take this to the remotest areas of the planet because we can do things of this nature. That's beautiful.
That's right.
That's amazing.
It is. It really is. I mean, we can share the gospel all over and, you know, what it is. I mean, you know, most priests I know now, you know, they don't have a lot of commentaries and stuff to prepare a homily. A lot of them just get on the internet now.
No, sure, yeah.
And they can look it up there. You know, you're seeing that the office now is prayed on an iPhone.
Right.
So it's just amazing what we have done and where the church is. But that does affect the future of the church and where it's going to take it, you know, and how it sees boundaries and different things like that. For an institution, that is a challenge.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the office on the iPhone. I was hanging out with a priest friend of mine all morning. We were at a retreat we were both performing for a youth group. And we were talking about that dynamic there that, you know, I prayed the divine office pretty frequently, and I carried the four volume. You know, I had a leather case for my four volumes. I basically was praying along with you guys every day. And then I thought, you know what, I'm just going to go to the phone app, and I'm going to make this a whole lot simpler for me. And and honestly, it's almost out of sight, out of mind. And we were admitting to each other that, yes, yeah, then you get on your app, and you're like, oh, I need to answer that text. Right. There's another a Facebook alert. And all of these distractions that come along with it being on your phone, which wasn't there when you actually had a volume in front of you.
That's right. And so, well, you know, and there, I'll be honest with you, there's a part of me that's old-fashioned.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's nice to turn a page.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
It really is, and you know, or to take a picture with a roll of film and not have to look at it for a while and just absorb the moment instead of you know, just being obsessed with checking it out.
Oh, yeah,
and
sure.
Just letting be what is. And you know, one of the church things that the church does call is to slow down.
Yeah.
You know, and just as Joan Rivers used to say, and smell the coffee.
Yeah, absolutely.
And because I think oftentimes we're running so ragged. We're running, and the more we do that, the more isolated, the more fearful oftentimes we get. It's always been the great irony to me that with all this connectedness now, we find ourselves in many ways more isolated than ever.
Yeah. Well,
it really is.
I was going to say, and the unfortunate reality is that you don't have to follow everything out there. Even though you're connected,
oh, no.
You can still isolate yourself, unfortunately, into this kind of protective, isolated mode, and that's a problem as well. We're going to take a break, Father. We're going to come back and talk more. Father
okay.
Tom Turman with us this afternoon. More to come. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you, Leo Brown. Almost Hour, culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Follow me on Facebook. Many of the things we discuss here on the show, you can view and discuss there as well. And sometimes those conversations go for days, and that's fine. I want to talk about stuff. It's always good. Father Tom Turman with us this afternoon. Welcome back, Father.
Good to be back with you. Thank you.
We're talking about mission and this beautiful connection that you guys are developing with your Guatemalan friends and the Salvatorians down there. One of the mission elements that I see in this papacy, and I think we'd both agree, is this mission of pastoral care, especially to
right.
those who have been disenfranchised from the church, oftentimes through divorce and remarriage. And there's been a lot of talk about this recently, Father. I just want to get your take on, you know, certainly Pope Francis applauding the Argentinian bishops for their work and really trying to build some bridge of reconciliation. What do you hope to see come from this, or what are your thoughts and what you've seen so far?
Well, I think it's finally taken into reality that, you know, when the original idea of how we handle marriage and divorce and remarriage, all of that happened, you know, way back when, you know, the average person didn't live beyond 30 or 40.
Hmm.
You know, it was a very small, short lifestyle. It's kind of an easy thing to maintain. But as time has gone and life has gone really more complicated, you're seeing families in very difficult, struggling situations, economic situations. You know, I mean, if you want to talk about an issue that's tearing this this election apart, is who's got the profit and who doesn't, who's making it, who isn't, and what that's doing to communities. We see it right there in the East, you know, how in the eastern part of damage. that so much of this is happening on, and what does this do to families? And I think what the Pope is recognizing is, you know, you cannot look at life in this hard, rigid, these are the rules, blah, 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 way of doing things as much. There's a certain level that you have to, but you also have to see the humanity in behind it in order to make it real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that's what he's trying to do, and that's what they're trying to do. Where can we walk with these couples that are really suffering? I mean, this isn't just, you know, some make-believe. This is real hurt we're dealing with.
Right. Well, and, yeah, I think that, you know, talking about how do you deal with what you're dealing with, what you have now, what you have before you, and, you know, in this Amoris Laetitia, we have this interesting element of talking about what St. Thomas Aquinas had to say about this pastoral grayness that can come to play when you're really trying to wade through something that can't be, unfortunately, as hard-lined, black and white as one would hope. I think we want simple solutions. I think that's
And that's human nature to want that. But the fact is, 90% of life is gray.
Right.
You know, I mean, really, when you think about it, when I sit with people and they're talking their problems, I mean, it's most of the time it's not a choice of this is right, that's wrong. Mm. It's usually which is the better of the choices.
Right, right.
Which one do I deal with? And then you're dealing with, you know, and the way the economy is now, the way everything is, people are more broken up. They're more separated. You know, our families today have got challenges that were unimaginable 20 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, really was. And so I think he's recognizing that.
Right. And I would say back to your original point, when you look at the dynamics at play when it comes to the church's position on these issues, it's guided us for a long time, and that's great. But to look at the challenges realistically and say, if we really do have a majority of marriages that are somewhat irregular, if there's anyone who feels like they're excluded from the church community because of this, we need to find a way to somehow reconcile to bring about healing.
Right. And the struggle is how do you do that and yet stay with the integrity and the teaching that you're trying to also hold as well? What's the fine line? How do you balance that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which can be done, but it's not necessarily easy, I'm sure.
No, it isn't. And you know, and one thing they did was they did revise some of the rules kind of concerning that, which is allowing local bishops to have a little bit more say in particular types of cases where, you know, a young couple, maybe they were foolish or something, and the guy got married after he had too many martinis or something, and, you know, are you going to ruin his whole life for that later on? And they, you know, and those types of things, and how do you deal with that? So some discretion has also been given to the bishop. I think that was a wise move because they're right there on ground and they see what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and some of this, the way it's been presented, has been very interesting to follow. And this, I had a conversation with a priest friend over the weekend who was talking about the internal versus the external form of dealing with this, and that his concern, this was his particular challenge with this, is that, you know, the external form of the annulment has been the norm, and this, you know, with the tribunal and walking through and seeing everything, and then to have this kind of internalization of the form that basically takes it to, really does take it to a pastoral approach, and sometimes even to the parish and to the pastor, having the opportunity to work with a couple, perhaps through reconciliation, through some sort of even private reception of the Eucharist. I've seen a couple of different models that have been presented here. I think that there's two sides of the fence to this. There are those who see this as being, oh no, where does that stop? Because that's kind of opening now something that has not been opened before, could potentially be a Pandora's box. And then the other side.
Well, they argue that, yeah.
Yeah, then the other side of this, well, if it's so completely strict to the point of, as you say, and that illustration is probably something you've encountered as a priest, somebody who got married while they were...
We only knew.
While they were in Las Vegas, right? I mean, whatever. And they're like, oh, no, now you got to seek an annulment for this weekend fling that happened. You didn't even know what's taking place. You know, so I'm sure there's crazy dynamics at play in this. And all of this has to be taken into consideration. And it's I don't know that.
There is. There really is. And, you know, there is some models in other churches that I think could, like, for instance, in the Orthodox Church, they always have a one mistake clause.
Oh yeah,
you make a mistake, you're allowed one divorce, and you can get remarried one time. And there's no more. Too bad.
Interesting. So the Orthodox have kind of a universal forgiveness of the first time.
Right, recognizing that oftentimes people are very immature they make honest mistakes. They go into this, you know, with all the best intentions, and it sometimes doesn't work. You know, they were too immature, a lot of other things. Now, we see that, of course, in our annulment process, too, and what you're going through. But they recognize that and say, you know, this can happen. And maybe if they get married again, then they're going to have a much more mature, much more adult, much better prepared in order to live a lifetime of marriage and then to be able to live out that sacrament that they're offering. And that I know scholars have looked at that and said, I wonder if maybe that's an answer for that's also, you know, when you talk about married priests and others, they've always kind of looked at that model as well. If you're a priest before you get married, you don't get married, but if you're married and then you can still become a priest,
right, exactly.
But then you're only allowed to live in that marriage. If she dies, well, then you have to live a celibate life after that.
Kind of
looking at these models of compromise that they see around. And again, you know, when you're a mission church, you start to pick up that information.
Right.
You start to hear from that and see that coming in and getting thrown in. I said, you know, the way the church operates is like a giant bowl of burgoo. You know, I miss burgoo, actually. I love burgoo.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, and, you know, it has to bubble up. You know, these things have to bubble up and work and steam off and do whatever in order to create that rich stew that is who we are. I hope that's not too crude a description of the church.
Well, I mean,
I think it kind of fits, actually.
Well, it first off, it takes a while to get to arrive at some of these decisions and even recognize the challenges to begin with. And yeah, I really applaud Pope Francis for having the courage to attack these issues as he has and to really say, you know, we got to find a way to reconcile. Because when you've got one of the biggest pastoral issues out there that has no solution, there's a problem. You know, I mean, we got to find a way to find a solution. And unfortunately, as you know, few couples really approach the annulment process, whether it's just the sake of a fear or, you know, they're concerned about the scrutiny that they would go through, whatever. But it's not something that seems available, unfortunately, to them.
Right. And it varies with the diocese, too. You know, and how strict the diocese is and how they handle it and how pastorally they handle it. I remember the best diocese I ever saw at the time was the Diocese of Minneapolis-St. Paul. And I knew a couple that were very involved in that and the whole thing. They created a whole program to help couples understand what an annulment is, that it's actually a pastoral outreach to you.
Yeah.
And that it can be a truly healing process. And they tried to make it that, and it was wonderful. It was really a positive way of approaching it that I hadn't seen a lot of other places.
No. Well, you know, and hopefully through this process, I know that has been the discussion, that there could be some sort of streamlined approach that would certainly still scrutinize this to the point of saying, okay, we're going to complete the process, but maybe it doesn't have to be a year or more time, and maybe it doesn't have to be quite the degree of scrutiny that has been there, and maybe it can take place.
Yeah, well, one of the reasons it takes so long is the dioceses are overwhelmed.
Yeah, they're backlogged, yeah.
I mean, they're backlogged. It's more backlogged than it is anything else at times because, you know, I joked with one guy, I said, it's quicker to get citizenship in the United States than it is to get an annulment.
Well,
it's because of the backups.
Yeah.
It's not because that people are deliberately holding it up. It's just that they have so many cases they can't keep up.
Wow. Well, Father, we're out of time. It's always great to talk
Very
to
good.
You. Great to hear your perspective. And we'll see you when you get around the Kentucky way here next time.
Okay, maybe we'll have a good football season this year, right?
Yeah, sure. All right, Father.
Don't laugh so hard.
All right, God
all right,
bless.
You take care.
We'll talk to you next time. More to come in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon. We're back in Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown, almost hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Father Michael White joins us on Thursdays. Father, how are you?
Hey, Leo. How you doing today?
Good. Rebuilt Church Association. Did I say it right?
That's right.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
I can't believe it. That's like if I actually spelled guarantee right, which I've never done in my life. If I ever type that correctly, it would be a banner day, but that's never happened. So at least I've done that one. So what's going on? What are you guys doing now?
I am so excited because we have a brand new website for our parish.
Oh, good. All right. And what are you doing on the site? You're doing live streaming and things of that nature?
We're doing live streaming, and we've got all kinds of cool features to it, and you can see it all at churchnativity.tv.
All right. Very cool.
And the reason that I mention it is because I really want to encourage everybody out there to take a look at their parish websites and to invest whatever they can in their website. Because today, more now than ever, you are your website.
Yeah.
You guys have a great website at Breadbox, and you know that well.
Yeah. Yeah, it often is the first introduction. And, you know, and honestly, for me personally, I'm a Twitter and Facebook guy, so that's kind of what I look for first. I look for the interaction from an organization and those social media platforms. But I know most aren't in that world. Most are still looking at the website. They want to see what it is that is offered there, and they really gauge the effectiveness of an organization by what they see at that site. And you're right. I mean, they make so many judgments based on that. And we had this conversation at my school, my son's school, about the effectiveness of that website. And it's amazing how much stock people put in what they see there.
If your parish is serious about evangelization, and we all need to be these days.
Sure.
You need to be serious about your website. But because before a newcomer, an unchurched person, will ever set foot in your church, they're going to your website.
Oh, yeah.
And if they don't like what they see, or they don't understand what they see, or there's out-of-date information.
Right. Looks archaic, right?
They're gonna keep looking. They're going to go elsewhere.
No. Yeah, you know, and I don't know that there's been enough emphasis, especially in Catholic parishes, on what kind of tool your website can really be. And it's great that you guys putting that emphasis
on it. That's right. We like to say that it's a three-pronged destination, that it's a destination for an invitation. So I invite my unchurched friend or neighbor to come to church. They're going to go to the website first. They're going to take a look at what we've got to offer and make a decision accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also a destination in itself, that there are people who are coming to our website, who are watching us live stream services, and that's their association with us at this point.
Right.
And maybe it'll grow at some point, and they'll end up on our campus. But right now, that's a destination in itself.
Hmm.
And only third is the website for the purposes of the parishioners.
Mm-hmm.
And can be an incredibly useful tool for them.
All right. But I think it's interesting that you put your own individuals in the third spot. It's kind of like that Jesus, others, and yourself, right? You know, it's kind of that you're putting yourself in that third position because you really do see this evangelization opportunity. And I also find it interesting that you're willing to say it's okay to have this group of individuals who only engage on the website, if that's where they are right now, if you're meeting them at least at that point, you're giving them something to connect with. If that is a live stream of a mass or a homily, at least it's a connect point.
That's right.
Yeah.
We live stream all of our Sunday masses in real time, and then we also have available on the website all of my previous homilies that they can watch anytime they want to.
And you're seeing some traffic in that's saying, hey, it's worth the investment that we're putting into this to make sure that people are connecting there.
Well, at this point, it's our biggest opportunity for growth, because we're maxed out in our church, space, as you know, as you've seen.
Yeah, sure.
People can still join us online. And, of course, the capacity there is limitless.
Exactly, yeah. Well, you know, and we're a big fan of Craig Groeschel, as we've talked about this guy before, and this is how he built his congregation. I mean, it was the whole .tv website. It was the everything being live streamed, everything being connected there, and to really build this community, this virtual community. He was one of the pioneers to do that, and it's worked out incredibly well for the evangelization efforts there.
It certainly has. He's one of the largest churches in the country, and it all started exactly, you know, on his website.
Yeah. Well, hey, here's news I want to share with you since we're talking about Craig. We will be down at Andy Stanley's church in Atlanta coming up in a few weeks because Breadbox Media will be up. And this very show, will be live from the Catalyst Conference that's taking place in early October. So we're excited about that.
No kidding.
Yeah, about that.
Really?
Yeah. Indeed. I hope that I'm able to sit down with Stanley. I've never met him personally, but as you know, I've shared with you, it was much of his inspiration that kind of pushed me on to go, okay, we're going to do this Breadbox Media thing. So he doesn't know that, right? but it was a lot of the things that I understood from his efforts in evangelization to say, you know, we should be doing this too. We should be a part of it. So
if you get a chance to sit down and talk with him, please tell him that he has huge fans here in Baltimore at Church of the Nativity.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, like I say, I know it's going to be a whirlwind, and having done these things, as I know you have, it's often difficult to catch time with the big guys, but certainly I'm going to do what I can to capture
absolutely
a moment with him. So, yeah. So it should be fun. We're looking forward to that. So, I think it's great because all of these tools are especially important this day and age. And I think it's easy to kind of think, well, as long as we do this one thing, whatever that one thing is, we don't really have to diversify, and that's just not true.
No, it's just not true. It's just not true. We have to do everything that we can do. We have to use all of the tools at hand. And the internet is a huge tool and a huge opportunity that God has given us in our generation.
So what advice would you have, because I think this is the very conversation, Father, we had around the school council, again, associated with my parish, but an independent site all its own for the grade school. And, you know, the conversations came up, well, could we find students to help with this? Could we find, you know, what do we do? How do you really invest resources when you're so limited in resources? How do you do something effective?
Well, you have to prioritize for sure. Mm. And for me, the number one priority is that the website is up to date.
Right.
No matter how simple your website, you can have an up-to-date website, whoever you are, whatever your circumstances. Mm-hmm. And I would go so far as to say, better not to have a website at all than to have an out-of-date website.
Right. Something that's talking.
If I go to somebody's homepage and I see that there's out of date information,
right,
I leave.
Yeah. right, because that again, it's that we talked a moment ago. It's this first impression that you see, and if someone is not attentive enough to say, okay, we got to scrub off stuff on here that is expired, it kind of gives you an idea of maybe the overall effort.
Exactly. You know, and it suggests to me that they're not looking at their website, so why should I?
Exactly. Well, and
beyond that, I think then any organization, a parish school, can discipline themselves budget-wise to increase their investment in a website over time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you think about so many of the platforms that are out there. There's a number of them that, you know, you don't have to be a designer. You don't have to be a designer.
There are people who will do this for you. There are companies that can maintain your website at minimum monthly charges, and you can really have something that's very attractive and very easy to use. Functionality is extremely important, too. Mm-hmm. I was just on a website, a parish website, this morning, and I was trying to get to a certain place on the website, and I just couldn't get there. Right. And it was very frustrating.
Yeah. Well, for me, if I see a site that doesn't load on my mobile device with an actual mobile site, then I get that's the one that gets me. If I've got to like scroll in, you know, and zoom in on a little box to enter something, oh, what, this day and age, really?
Yeah. So. And the vast majority of the traffic on your website is probably going to be viewed on mobile devices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, it all sounds so simple. I mean, it really, you would think that it's just common sense where we are now with technology as it is, that this would be one of the first places investments are made. But you and I both know that's not the case. We see far too many.
You don't have to spend a lot of time looking at the websites of Catholic churches to know that is so.
Mm-hmm. And the one thing I've seen, and I don't know how you feel about this, we're almost out of time, there are some where something's exclusively English or exclusively Spanish, and we know that that's something you got to address, too, with the population as it is. But we can't talk about that because we're out of time.
Okay, next week.
All right, Father. God bless you. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all we have time for. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. God bless.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.